Welcome back to another episode of the Maroon Weekly. Once again, I'm Jake.
I'm Greg.
And I'm Celeste.
Before we get started with the week's reports, we have a message from our sponsor, Steppenwolf Theater. The legendary Steppenwolf Theater invites you to see Purpose, a spirited, funny, and epic drama about an esteemed Black Chicago family of civil rights leaders, pastors, and congressmen. But like all families, there are cracks and secrets just under the surface. Don't miss the world premiere of Purpose by Brandon Jacob Jenkins, directed by Tony Award winner Felicia Rashad, and performed by a cast of all-star artists. Chicago audiences are loving Purpose, which has been extended through April 28th. $15 student tickets are available for the entire run with code STUDENT15 at steppenwolf.org. We're back in the studio after spring break. Did you guys get up to anything exciting?
I didn't do much. I stayed in Chicago. I went to the Art Institute with my brother. We watched Creed. We went to the Museum of Science and Industry.
So. How'd your brother like Hyde Park?
He liked Hyde Park. We went to Valois.
I was at Valois yesterday.
It's really good.
It is good. The patty melt yesterday? Hit. How about you, Greg? Anything exciting?
Nope, just went home. I was in Wisconsin yesterday visiting my grandparents. But nothing over spring break. What about you?
I finally got my driver's license, which was good to do. Got to see some friends who go to college in Boston. It was a good time all around. Let's start with a couple reports from Celeste on recent developments in unions and contracts.
So starting with the nurses union, in a vote on March 12th and 13th, National Nurses United voted to ratify a new contract with the UChicago Medical Center. The new contract was reached after NNU announced their plan to strike on March 14th. However, the strike was called off due to a tentative contract agreement being reached with UChicago Med on March 11th. A March 15th press release from NNU detailed the new contract. It includes wage increase of 20% to 40% over the life of the contract. It also includes implementation of new processes that will address the understaffing that led to many nurses leaving UChicago Med. The union has been in negotiations with UCM since September 2023 and reached 26 tentative agreements on each individual issue before reaching this comprehensive agreement. UCM and nurses both agreed they wanted to avoid a strike. A UCM statement read, quote, "No one wins in a strike." The UCM statement also emphasized its quality of care and spoke to efforts addressing staffing shortages. Quote, "Patient care and safety are UCM's top priority. We are repeatedly recognized as among the safest hospitals in the nation and recently received our 24th consecutive A grade in safety from the prestigious independent Leapfrog group. We've developed new processes to make sure we're continuing to work collaboratively with the nurses to develop staffing plans to meet patients' needs in real time." The Graduate Student Union also reached its first tentative agreement on March 6th. This comes nearly 4 weeks after the union signaled its willingness to strike as negotiations were not moving forward. GSU has been negotiating with administration since last May. The new agreement contains major boons for grad workers, including an increased minimum funding rate, increased childcare stipends, and the ability to involve the union in discrimination and abuse of authority claims. The agreement also raises the minimum stipend for PhD students from $41,000 starting July 1st and $45,000 on October 1st, with 3% increases to come in each of the next 2 years. The agreement also stipulates a $19 minimum hourly wage and secures funding for the quarter for grad students if their position is canceled at any point. Beyond compensation, the union secured a number of long-sought-after policy stipulations, including union representation in Title IX hearings. Based on the summary released by the union, however, GSU was unable to secure the addition of codified language against caste and political view discrimination. Before being enforced, the agreement between the university and the GSU must be ratified by a full vote. The meeting for the contract ratification vote will be held tomorrow on March 25th. So, good news for both unions.
Yeah, I mean, good news for people on campus that that strikes aren't going to happen and that these groups got a lot of what they asked for, if not everything.
Yeah. Both contracts seem really robust, and they seem to have a lot of success. So, good news for workers.
Good news for workers. Yeah, I wonder why the anti-discrimination language of all things had to be dropped from a final agreement. Why that was something that the university held strong on.
Yeah, well, from my reporting, I heard it was because of donors that had some pull, but the university has came out with a statement against those allegations, so I do not know.
Next, we'll go to Greg, who has an update on how you, our listeners, may potentially have a way to earn some cash from the university.
Yeah, so the university is facing a $4.95 million settlement payout over the COVID-19 tuition lawsuit. The U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Illinois Eastern Division granted a preliminary approval in December 2023 for the settlement on a class action lawsuit that, if given final approval, would require the university to disperse cash awards of a whopping $25 to all students enrolled at any time from January 1st to the end of spring quarter in 2020. A hearing will be held April 10th to decide whether to give the settlement final approval. Named plaintiffs Erica Kincheli and Alexander Castro brought the class action lawsuit against the University of Chicago. The lawsuit argues that students are entitled to refunds from the university because they received remote instruction during the pandemic, but still paid as much tuition as they would have for in-person instruction, with only a reduction in the student services fee or no charge for students living over 50 miles from Hyde Park. Those in the settlement class were notified of the preliminary approval through an email and through a mailed notice. They were directed to a website providing information about the lawsuit. Now, the lawsuit itself was originally filed on May 20th, 2020, then a graduate student at the School of Social Service Administration and a member of the student organization, or the RSO, UChicago for Fair Tuition, or UCFT, have been vocally opposed to UChicago's continuing to charge regular tuition despite the fact that students received instruction exclusively online. UCFT advocated freezes and decreases in tuition and fees early on in the pandemic, including through a tuition strike in May 2020 that lasted 2.5 weeks. For the full story, see the article up on the Bruins website published by Tiffany Lee.
Yeah, the $25 settlement is kind of a comically low number, especially when compared to a $5 million, overall settlement payout. I don't know how much larger the payout can get than $25, depending on how much tuition you were paying or what. But I wonder how the money ended up that way. Some lawyer is probably getting a big chunk of that money. There was actually an objection from someone named John Arnold to this settlement, who said that he strongly disagreed with the way that the money is being spent and that it's unfortunate that the settlement class gets coupons. $25, basically a coupon in the scale of the amount of tuition that people pay at this university.
Yeah, especially if money is going to the lawyer altogether, it doesn't seem like the best way to use university funds.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it sets a precedent of, like, don't do stuff like this for the university and hopefully for other universities that see it happening, but in terms of the actual direct outcome, doesn't seem like it's creating much justice if it's a $25 coupon that most students won't bother to get. We have one final report from me on the Chicago White Sox. That's the baseball team, the Major League Baseball team that plays here on Chicago's South Side, and they're asking the city for $1 billion in public funding to support the construction of a new stadium in the 78, the new development near the South Side that's just north of Chinatown. Jerry Reinsdorf, who owns the White Sox as well as the Chicago Bulls, has signaled that if the government does not provide financial support for a move to the 78 and for the construction of a new stadium, then his team may have to leave Chicago once their lease at Guaranteed Rate Field expires in 2028. Unfortunately, there's no real transparency regarding the finances of the White Sox or pretty much any other Major League Baseball team. We don't know what kinds of profit margins they have, whether they generate enough money that they should be able to pay for a new stadium themselves. This tactic of threatening to leave if you don't get enough public funding is common for professional sports teams in America. Another notable recent example is that of the Washington Wizards, the NBA team that has threatened to leave the nation's capital for suburban Northern Virginia. Reinsdorf has promised billions of dollars in investment and the creation of tens of thousands of jobs if this all were to come to fruition. But the economic impact of these sorts of moves is never really clear, and it would likely negatively impact the current home of the White Sox at 35th and Shields in the Armour Square neighborhood. It's unclear where things will go from here. In the past, the White Sox have successfully gotten public money from the state to support stadium constructions and renovations. But the current governor, J.B. Pritzker, has been vocally opposed to dedicating significant public revenue to the construction of a new ballpark, stating that he would need a clear indication that the investment in a ballpark would yield a, quote, long-term return for the taxpayers. This report is based on an article in the Southside Weekly written by Malachi Hayes, a Bridgeport-based freelance writer. Check out the Southside Weekly for more excellent content on issues facing our neck of Chicago. And check out Southside Sox, where Malachi Hayes is managing editor, to see more White Sox content.
I mean, I'm not plugged into the sports world, but I do have thoughts on the 78. I think it's sort of eerie that it's this manufactured neighborhood and they're spending billions on it. So having a White Sox stadium there, I don't know. It's just freaky to me. But
I don't know. Every neighborhood is manufactured at some point, right? I guess this is maybe more deliberate.
Right, but neighborhoods arise organically. The 78 is like this, you know, they're advertising it. They're saying there's going to be diversity there. It's just manufactured in a way that people don't usually see.
We do see other things like this in other cities, definitely. I think of the Seaport District in Boston as being sort of a manufactured, like, thing. Like, it's a lot of these neighborhoods have just gone so vertical. There's so many tall buildings. I'm sure the 78 will be very vertical. They'll want to maximize, you know, the 62 acres or whatever it is. It won't be a big development on the scale of things.
I wonder where the White Sox will go if they leave Chicago.
Yeah, I don't think they'll leave Chicago. It was mentioned in this article that this is often really just a bluff for these sports team owners. They just want to raise the money. They'll say they'll leave. It doesn't happen too often that they actually do leave. The Washington Wizards case in D.C., it looks like just yesterday the D.C. Attorney General was saying that they have to stay there for another 20 years. I guess it would be illegal for them to leave in some way. I don't know. I'd have to read more about that. But there is a lot tying these teams to the cities they've been in for a really long time. The White Sox have been in Chicago for over 100 years. It'd be kind of crazy to see them go. Mm-hmm. All right, that's our episode. Once again, I'm Jake.
I'm Greg.
And I'm Celeste.
We'll be back next week.